You're listening to the Monocle Arts Review with me, Robert Bound. Today we've switched up the schedule on account of South by Southwest, so if you're tuning in for our weekly music show, then fear not, it's made a temporary switch with books, and we'll be back this Thursday. In the meantime, I'm joined by Arifa Akbar, literary editor at The Independent, to round out the week in fiction, which features a mother and daughter reviving their relationship from a hospital bed, some shoe-based storytelling between India and England, and an erratic couple at odds over some apple trees. That's all coming up on today's edition of the Monocle Arts Review. Stay tuned. And here we are, Arifa Akbar, as advertised.
Hello. Well,
not as advertised, but as advertised just now. In the
it's
menu.
Really, it is me.
It's she's back with a vengeance. Three interesting books. Before we switched on the microphones, we were talking about how unusual these books were.
Yeah.
We're going to kind of start as we mean to go on.
Can I just say,
yeah.
Strangely, they're all quite connecting.
Really?
Weirdly.
That's what I like. This is
yeah.
That's what people come to Arifa Akbar for. Seamless connectedness. Like an advert for a mobile phone operator that shall not be named, because I've spent most of my life on the phone to them, it seems like, this last 2 weeks. Anyway,
right.
So Tracy Chevalier of Girl with a Pearl Earring fame has
eighth
a new
novel.
Book, eighth novel, At the Edge of the Orchard. Tell us about this one. Does it make you feel hungry for apples, Arifa?
Definitely, and it makes me want to look up at trees too.
Yeah.
It's not just apples, it's trees too, and apple trees. Right, so this book is about a family, a sort of settler family, you know, the pioneer yeah. Americans, mid-19th century, and it's a family of apple growers, basically. But there's quite a lot of darkness, actually, in the first of this book, because the married couple, Sadie and James, are in battle. They're at war with each other, and they've got these children, like lots of them, and they're living in this quite hard terrain where, you know, they have settled in America. They have moved to the Midwest to, as settlers did, to tame the land. And you get this sense of the hard, cruel nature of trying to tame the land. And then they have this sort of dynamic with the marriage where love is very hard to see. They're very hateful towards each other, and the children become sort of the collateral damage. The children also, they're living in poverty in this black swamp in Ohio, and the children are dying of fever. So, you know, they're losing children as fast as they're having them. There's this sense of just the poverty of their life, but also this is the land of opportunity, and it's not really giving them much of an opportunity. I talked to Tracy Chevalier actually last week at a literary festival, and she said, because I said, you know, there's family dysfunction at the heart of this pioneer American story. And she said that was meant to be there because she was unpicking the American dream, this myth that the wholesome American family settled, you know, moved west, and it made America, and it was this happy Walton's little house on the prairie.
It was an interesting thing. I mean, obviously, it sounds like Tracy Chevalier has been thinking about this book for years, as you would have to for it to be coming out now. But it makes an interesting time for reading this, as America
doesn't
seems to
it?
Be in turmoil and doing a lot of, if not navel gazing, then looking at itself in the mirror. That this book makes interesting reading at the moment. Perhaps.
You know, on so many levels. So on the one level, there is the American dream, and we are all questioning it. We're looking at America, we're looking at its race politics, but its economy too. And we're looking at this sort of basic idea of rugged individualism, and the son, so these are the good enoughs, the family, and
yeah.
their son, a very shocking incident happens.
That's a good, the good enoughs, it's a very good sort of, it sounds like a sort of Salem, Massachusetts, doesn't it? It sounds like Arthur Miller, what's it called? What's the play I'm thinking of?
Yes, that, the witches,
the
Salem.
Exactly.
Salem.
Yeah, exactly.
Whatever.
Yeah. The Crucible by Arthur
Crucible.
Miller, that's what I'm thinking of. I'm thinking of Goody Proctor and those sorts of characters, right?
It's so American.
Maybe it's a shout back to that sort
it's
of
so
thing.
American in that it's supposed to denote a wholesomeness,
yeah.
isn't it?
Yeah, exactly.
But it's there's a really shocking incident that occurs one third of the way through, and the narrative ends, and we enter another kind of tone. But anyway, what happens at the end of that third is that the son, their elder son, Robert, runs away. And he is kind of like this lone cowboy. He's trying to escape this trauma of his past by just running west.
So he rides west.
He rides the lone cowboy,
right.
You know, this idea of the rugged individualist American who can make their own fortune by going to, well, it's post-Gold Rush, but, you know, nearly, he's trying to make the Gold Rush. He's trying to make his fortune, but he's also trying to escape his past and mould himself as in the American dream. And it just doesn't work because the running away, he can go no further west at one point. And of course, this is sort of where we are now in contemporary America. We are revisiting these ideas and thinking, are they just mythologies? And also, she takes a look at this idea of pioneer heroism. How heroic was the pioneer if it was sort of getting rid of indigenous populations?
Rounding up American Indians and shooting them, yeah.
Exactly. And also, there's this sort of whole other story about nature. And, you know, this is where your apples and trees come in. And the beauty of these trees, honestly, she described, they're sort of, that aspect of the book was my favourite because it blew me away, the description of these giant redwoods and these other Californian trees called the sequoias, and that the beauty and the solace you seek in nature, but also its imperviousness to your own pain, all of that. But it was the pioneer that was bashing it up and chopping it down and commercialising and making money out of this nature.
There's a strange analogy to be made at the end of this book, or at the end of our discussion of it, I'm afraid, also, Arifa, that you chop down redwoods and plant apple trees. You'd cut down one sort of tree, which does not give fruit, to give another, which at least you can make some money out of.
Well,
so there's perhaps a metaphor for modern America there.
Well, worse still, you chop down these glorious redwoods to make bowling alleys.
Fine by me. That is At the Edge of the Orchard.
We know your love of bowling.
Yes, exactly. We were talking there about Tracy Chevalier's new book. It's called At the Edge of the Orchard, as recommended by Arifa Akbar. We're going to go now to a new book called My Name is Lucy Barton. This is by Elizabeth Strout. Yeah. This is an interesting one. A writer on writing, maybe this one?
This is both a writer on writing and a story of a daughter, and a grown-up daughter and a mother. And, you know, I didn't pick up this book straight away. It sort of passed me by. Last week it was shortlisted for the Bailey's Women's Prize Fiction, but I was struck. The reason I actually picked it up is because I'd read the reviews, and they were rave reviews, and they were saying this is beautiful, searing stuff. And I have to admit, I'd never read Elizabeth Strout. She's an American author. Mm-hmm. She writes about lives in the Midwest, but she makes huge sales there. She's won a Pulitzer Prize for her last collection. It was a collection of sort of joined up short stories called Olive Kettridge. So this is my first, you know, encounter with Elizabeth Strout. And it was a curious, kind of stripped down, quite spare story. It's about a grown up woman. She's a writer, and she's in hospital for 5 days. And she's clearly estranged from a mother who turns up after years of non-communication, non-contact. And for 5 days, she just sits at the edge of her hospital bed. And that's sort of it. But within that,
so it's all told in flashback. It's all reminiscences.
Yeah,
it's memory. It's
exactly.
The dredging up of memory
through the gaps in their conversation, the things that aren't said, the fact that the mother is unable to or refuses to say, I love you, even though her daughter might be dying. And it's quite hard to read, you know, and horribly compulsive to read. And you can read it in one sitting, which I did. A whole life unravels during these 5 days. I loved this one moment in the book when it said, this is the story of a mother who loves her daughter imperfectly. And that's exactly it. It's how the imperfect love that our families give us, you know.
Yeah.
So we grow up saying, I'm like this because my mother behaved like this towards me, or I'm like this because this happened with my father, or I'm the youngest and therefore...
You know, do you get a sense with Elizabeth Strout's character, Lucy Barton, I suppose it must be, that Lucy Barton is sort of apologising, has been trying to get away with it in her life by blaming things on her mum, and then her mum turns up and then she doesn't have anyone to turn to.
Well, her mum turns up and it kind of confirms the narrative and confirms why, you know, how she's been hurt by her mother. They grew up in quite a lot of social deprivation. They were a very poor, hardscrabble family. And along with that social deprivation came emotional deprivation. Like, it wasn't quite abuse, but there was a hardness, maybe an emotional meanness within that family. To cut a long story short, she escaped it and she sort of cut off from that. And now she's forced, because of this mother at the foot of her bed, she's forced to question, when I look back at the past, is this really the truth, or is this sort of a story that I've partly changed to suit my needs? A bit like, you know, when you look at family pictures and you're 4 or 5 and you probably can't remember being there, but you've told yourself you can, or, you know, somebody's explained what you just did. And you sort of adopt that story. And this is a lot about memory, but the unreliability of memory. She keeps thinking, is that what happened? Is that the truth? And she's a writer. And so there's this thing that writers have done before where you question the truth of memory and you sort of think maybe it's closer to fiction. You know, what we, how we describe our past is closer to fiction than we'd like to think. We make sense of it by sort of storytelling it to ourselves. And yeah. I know there's, you know, I can recognise that in things that I do. But one of the things she does say, which is she has this writing teacher that she really greatly admires. And she says, this writing teacher tells her, you're really ever only going to tell one story. And I was struck by that because I thought, is that what authors do actually in the end? And you know, my chat with Tracy Chevalier, I asked her about writing an autobiography and she said, you know, in retrospect, after you look at the book you've written maybe 2 years ago, and remember, she writes mainly historical fiction, so it is far removed from her life. She said, I can actually see me and my life in it.
The same preoccupations, masquerading,
the same preoccupations.
As, masquerading as different periods in history, different leitmotifs perhaps. One apple is another earring perhaps, we could say.
Absolutely.
Well, we've run out of time, sadly, for Elizabeth Strout there. My name is Lucy Barton. It's interesting stuff. Just very quickly on that, is the writer writing about being a writer? How easy is that to read? I mean, is that, does she handle that subtly?
It could have been achingly pretentious or actually just for a very narrow audience, because not all of I'm interested in writing writers.
That's right,
but yeah, and people like Rachel Cusk have written about it, and so many other authors have. I think she pulls it off really well. And, you know, the sales in America, this has been a successful book, and other, it's not only other writers buying it, it's people, real people. And because this story is about something that we can relate to, about our relationship with family and family love and what is missing in it, what leaves us unsettled about the limits that the mother love might give us. Because of that, it's quite universal. And the writer's story is in the mix.
Okay, well, that is My Name is Lucy Barton, a new from Elizabeth Strout. We're going to finish up. We've got a couple of minutes to do The Living by Anjali Joseph. This sounds like an interesting one, notable for its absence of plot, but strong characters. Arifa, talk us through this one.
So it's got, this is, I quite admire this book for what it does. And in the end, I really enjoyed it. But I was a bit shocked. I was thinking, what's going on here? Because you enter it and it's essentially the splicing of lives of two people. One is a woman in her mid-30s in Scotland. She works in a shoe factory called Claire. The other is an elderly man called Aaron who makes shoes in a town in Western India. And the only two things that unites them is the shoe theme, nothing more than that. So I was waiting for something grander, something more, something that will bring it all together, you know, and give us this rounded plot. Never happened, for starters. It begins to amble through Claire's life. So you encounter her son and then the memory of her now ex-partner who she had the son with, and then the man she meets in the pub that quite fancies her, and what, you know, they have a drink and then things progress
and the Pink Lady. That's what I call any fictional pub. Sorry.
I think it was
the
Pink Lady.
Apples here. And
you do, you sort of wonder what she do, you know, and then you get to Aaron, you get to Aaron's family, larger family circle, and he's going to a niece's wedding, and nothing quite happens, but everything happens. It reminds me a bit of Anne Enright's last novel, The Green Road, where I read and I was just, she writes about everything and nothing, if you know what I mean. She writes about ordinary life, but these small incidences, the moments that just become the story.
Yeah.
And it's a really, I think it's quite a radical thing to do.
Because there's something, there is always that, attempt to attain the great American novel or whatever it is. Maybe the great ordinary life is something that really needs to be written about.
You know? Well, you know, the film realist filmmakers have done it. We know from Ken Loach to so many more. They're just documenting the bigness in a small life. So nothing happens, everything happens. I mean, Anjali Joseph has said she's won lots of prizes for her other two novels. And I think this will win prizes for its rich interiority, but also that she said that It's the quiet incidences of daily life that she wants to capture. And I related to a lot of them. So, for example, Claire's son comes in. He's just making toast and he's putting crumbs everywhere. And he's just dropping things, you know, and messing the kitchen up. And in the way that a 16-year-old does, thoughtless 16-year-old. And he puts his peanut butter sort of dirty knife on the counter. And she said, I imagined picking that knife up and washing it and cleaning the crumbs off the counter. And it's a completely insignificant moment, but there was something that I really recognised, and I thought, this is brave of her to hinge a novel based on this, to create
based on crumbs.
Based on crumbs, she's created something much bigger.
And it's, how well does she, and how differently, and how well does she draw the Indian half of the book?
The Indian half of the book is completely different. His reflections are on the life he's lived, because he's coming sort of to the end, and he's living a lot of his life in his past, and he's assessing it. He's sort of taking an audit of what he did and didn't do towards his wife, and he's thinking about the mistress he had, the passion he had with her, his own failings, how in a way the people we live with, we don't know very well. There's a sort of distance with his wife, yet he lives with her. So he's sort of thinking about this paradox within intimacy. So I think Angie Joseph, I admire her for holding back, she, you know, restraining herself from giving us anything more than this. It's almost like a camera has drifted in to a window, to into these two rooms in a way, and then it just drifts out again. It cuts to black, because I also wanted to have a resolution. You know, I wanted to know what would happen to Claire with this bloke.
And it just stops.
It just cuts. Okay.
Well, many miles perhaps will be walked in these two pair of shoes. It's The Living, it's Anjali Joseph, and that's out now. Before that, we talked about My Name is Lucy Barton, new from Elizabeth Strout. At the beginning, we were talking about At the Edge of the Orchard, At the Edge of the Awkward by Tracy Chevalier. It's a Freudian, most Freudian of all possible slips. And that brings us to the end of today's Monocle Arts Review. My thanks, of course, go to my guest, Arifa Akbar. And you have been tuned in to the Monocle Arts Review with me, Robert Bound. The show is produced by Holly Fisher and researched by Fernando Augusto Pacheco. Don't forget to tune in to our weekend show, Meet the Writers, in which Georgina Godwin speaks with some of your favourite contemporary authors, from Douglas Copeland to Jan Martel. We'll be back at the same time tomorrow to review Television with Alice Vincent. But for the time being, for me, Robert Bound, thanks for tuning in.